Roger Lovelace for coming on and making an appropriate speech.
I'd like to introduce to you Led Zeppelin.
I'm just trying to find the bridge. Has anybody seen the bridge? One of the better keyboard players in the group.
She's sure a good friend. And I don't know where she could come from, but if she comes, I know she won't come back in.
John Henry Bonham, a childhood friend. Who is Karen Carpenter, anyway?
She's not my girl. Open up a newspaper and what do I see? See my girl. Oh, and when she walks, she walks. And people in the city, when she talks, she talks. And when she looks me in the eye, oh, she's my baby girl. Never tell me why yet.
Yes, say what? Ho, this is Brian. Call me the Hangman Gardener, coming to you from Ramblin' Towers, Tower Studio. I'm in the tower tonight, in scenic, yet rainy, Hespler, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramblin' Radio, episode 93 on the Off the Cuff Podcasting Network. Ramblin' Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to RambleOnRadio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links I might mention during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. And do not forget to leave a review. If you go to iTunes, look, if you're in iTunes for any reason, doing a quick search to see if Presence has been released yet as the deluxe edition, then pop over. Pop over to Ramble On Radio. Just do a quick Google of Ramble On Radio. It comes up right under podcasts. And leave a review. It helps them to see me. Go to Pod. It's on Podbean. Podbean at I Am Brian Dammit. Listen on Spreaker. And be sure and follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker. And if enough people followed, I could subscribe to iHeartRadio and put this in front of thousands. And also check it out, Ramble On Radio on YouTube. Although I don't, I have some of the podcast episodes videoed and on YouTube, but not many, not recent. And follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. I'm going to tell you, it's a rainy, damp night. I'm overlooking the sidewalk, and there's some poor sucker walking his dog. But it's just a damp, cold, rainy night, and it's washing away the winter goo. So it's a good thing. And I missed last week. The plan was this episode was going to happen last week. And then, what happened? Because it was Easter last weekend, right? And so I was going to do Wednesday night or Thursday. And I thought, even if I don't get it done then, I could slip it in Friday. I'm going to be hanging around all day. And then on Wednesday afternoon, I get a call from my wife. I've got tomorrow off, she says. How about you take the day off? We'll go to Buffalo. So I'll quick talk to my boss and boom, boom, boom. And we just went away for, you know, we got up Friday morning or Thursday morning and went away for the day. Spent the night in there. Got a room down there for the night and came back some Friday afternoon. It wasn't a big deal, but it meant this just got put completely aside. It got forgot about completely and all the other stuff that suddenly was happening. So it didn't happen last week. So here it is this week. We're going to talk about the 1975 USA tour by this little group called Led Zeppelin. You heard some stuff from in the intro. All that stuff was from that tour. Some Robert Plantisms. Linda Lovelace started off with Robert Plant's final words of the tour were... it's time to ramble on, goodbye. So you heard him say, it's time to ramble on, which sounds like it's... Oh, that thing might just become my new outro, my new final clip. I think it's almost too perfect, and I edited it down to a little shorter so we can even put it in the, I can put it in the intro as well. Make some decisions as time goes on, but I got both sides of that. And then we heard Linda Lovelace introducing the band in L.A. on the final night. Linda Lovelace, the 70s porn star. And then Robert Plant thanking her for her introduction. I think I started with him and thanking her for the introduction. She really, he says, for her speech or something, all she says is, "Ladies and gentlemen, Led Zeppelin. Or may I present to you Led Zeppelin." Virtually nothing she says, but that's why I threw that bit in. He was having some fun. Also a little little poker to John Paul Jones. In L.A., he says something about balls. He says, "Speaking of balls, here's a man with a lot of balls. In fact, three of them." And then in Vancouver, we slipped in John Paul Jones, one of the better keyboard players in the group. And then his introduction before Dazed and Confused, after Moby Dick, between Moby Dick and Dazed and Confused in Seattle on March 17th, he said, John Henry Bonham, a childhood friend. Who is Karen Carpenter anyway? And there's a rather famous story of Karen Carpenter that year won the Playboy magazine's Best Drummer Award, and with some media insight, Bonham was ranting around the hotel room about that, quite offended at the suggestion that she was a better drummer than him. So that's what that was about. So, and then of course the crunch they were doing about a minute and a half or 2 minutes into Whole Lotta Love, you got they rolled into the crunch. Some nights they did it, just a few clips of it. On that particular night, which I have to remember, I think it was Seattle. It was Seattle, March 17. They did virtually the whole song. So that's what you heard in the intro. And, sort of 7 minutes explaining the intro. How's that? No wonder this thing goes on and on and on sometimes. Okay, there's a few things that before we get to that, this, there were a few things happened. The movie March 30th, about a week and a half ago, if you went to the movie theaters, there was the Led Zeppelin movie. It was basically a video trailer from the old DVD release in 2002. Promotional version of that, and had probably about an hour and a half's worth of material from that video on the big screen. It's not a big deal, and it was strictly U.S., I think. I couldn't find it anywhere in Canada, and I didn't hear of it being anywhere else. I think it was strictly a U.S. thing. So those of you in the U.S. got to see it. Hope it was enjoyable for you. Most people seem to. It was just what it was. It wasn't a great thing. Anybody who likes the band enough to go to the theater to see something like this probably has the DVD anyway. Not a big deal. But nonetheless, you get you get Kashmir from Nebworth, and you get Stairway to Heaven from Earl's Court, and you know it's a good hour and a half in the theater, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. Last week, the band released an interactive video of Physical Graffiti, and it's basically the Brandy and Coke, which is trampled underfoot, edited version, blah blah blah. And you click on the windows. So it had the windows. You see, it's a video, but you could click on the video and get it to do different things. So you click on the windows, and you know, there'd be a girl dancing on one, and to the whole song. You could sit and watch the song 12, 16 times and get a whole different video. I just went through it once and kind of went through, see what was going on. And I never did get back to kind of follow up on it, but you could probably waste a day. Good day doing that. Our man Robert Plant stepped out this weekend, and I have to, in a place called Ledborough or something like that. I apologize, I don't have all the details on it. I kind of skimmed over this story when it first came out, because I thought it was a story of he is doing that Leadbelly tribute and with Alison Krauss, and it popped up, and I assumed that's what it was, because it was Lead something. It's Lead something. And I read Lead Belly, and because I skimmed over it, I guess that was this weekend, I thought. And then what I figured was the video would pop up, so I wasn't going to worry too much about reading the details. I'd see the video and figure out what they performed, etc. So it was one of those things I just kind of went past, I'll get to it later. And then I didn't get back to it later, and then I realized, no, that's not what it was. It was in England. It was, I apologize, I don't have and there is no video of it, but he showed up to listen to this little performance. It was a charity event that was going on, and he showed up with a lady friend who is reportedly he'd been dating for quite some time. And she is a singer, and I don't have her name on hand. But she does kind of folk stuff, old folk. I think she did Little Maggie was on her album. She has an album out, and she's a decent singer, and it's nice stuff. And I kind of like what she's very into the nature and the history of England, and so she does like Robert Browning poems to music and that sort of thing. And nice enough, but it wouldn't, I would say, and I guess this is how I kind of am with a lot of the Robert stuff these days, right, is, you know, it's okay, but it doesn't excite me, and it wouldn't hold me for 40 minutes, you know. But it was nice, you know, I watched one of the videos, that's nice. But, and it's got me thinking on a theme for the next week or two. We'll delve into the personal lives of the gents a little bit, but not salaciously, not TMZ-ily. Did you notice I Canadian that Z, the ZZ thing? I completely Canadian. It's TMZ-ily, not TMZ-ily. I actually normally go with Z, but that was just an obvious place to go Z. Because I was throwing the other thing in there. But anyway. So not salacious. But an interesting thought comes up, because she is younger, and really this has been under the radar, this little relationship. And Patty Griffin, of course, was younger, and is, by the way, I got an email today, is touring with Mavis Staples, who's exceptional. If you've never seen Mavis Staples, she's a real, you know, that might be a cool show. She's doing something like a dozen shows they're doing together. Starts in Michigan, heads to LA, so that kind of Midwest out west seemed to be the theme of what they were doing. Patty Griffin's another. She's much younger, but nobody seemed to get too interested in that compared to Jimmy Page with his recent girlfriend. And I have a thought or three on that. And I think I'll go next week. I think next week I'll discuss that, and we'll look at their families, and because I think there's a lot that's interesting about these guys personally, and not necessarily this. I mean, not I wouldn't avoid the more private and personal details if they're part of the story, I guess. But I wouldn't. I don't mean to go that route. So let me ponder on that anyway. But I think that's where I'm going to go for next week, which could be, it makes you either go, I'll miss next week, or it makes you go, ooh, I won't miss next week. Should be interesting one way or another, I would think. And finally, before we get to the topic du jour, Presents was released 39 years ago. It was last week now, March 31st, was the release of Presents. March 31st, 1976, and I'm not going to talk much about it. Presence has quietly become, and I have the book, Led Zeppelin 75, Stephen Davis's book on the 75 tour, and it's interesting. He talks about, at the end, he kind of goes through how they got to Presence, what happened after that tour, right? He kind of follows it up, and he calls Presence the best album. And he shows his review for Presidents, which is after he spent some time with them. And yeah, he took my headphones off after side two. My ears were smoking, he actually says. And for the record, at the end of it, he says, for the record, more than 30 years later, Presence is still my favorite Led Zeppelin album. So that's just something that I kind of read this week, and thought, or last week, I guess. And what's he say? Presence is another monster in what is now, and what by now is a continuing tradition of battles won by this band of survivors. That sort of thing. He's really big on it. And I have grown through the years to like Presence a lot. And when it comes out, when they do the reissues, which should be later this year, I will dig into Presence with some vengeance. And I guess this time next year, I'll dig into Presence too with some vengeance. Yeah, just as my off thought, it's one I've grown to love a lot. And by the way, I have on my I have to look it up. There's two songs on it that I get tossed around on. I think they're each other. Inexcusable, but happens. It's Kenny Store Rock and Royal Orleans, I believe, are the two. And the thing is, there's Led Zeppelin, the Led Zeppelin album with zero acoustic guitars on it. It's the only one with no acoustic songs, no acoustic guitars. But if you listen to the remasters, the made for iTunes of Candy Store Rock, there is an acoustic guitar in the background. Just a little note that I've noticed. So... the 1975 tour. They had a very slow year, 74. After 73 tour, the famous songwriters, the same tour, etc., etc., Robert Plant actually had some vocals on his vocal cord surgery. His range had dropped. They say an octave lower. It kind of shows. I guess if you go 73 shows to 75 shows, put them back to back. And so they headed out for this tour with some trepidation. Robert's voice was a little funny because they didn't know how it was going to respond after the surgery. And then before they left London, Jimmy caught his finger and badly sprained his finger, caught it in a train door back in London. What Jimmy Page, 1975 Jimmy Page, is doing rolling around London in a train, I would like to know. This is what he was doing. So they started out and the tour did not go well to start. Plant's voice was shot. Plant had a bad cold. And Jimmy's finger. Jimmy was using his three finger technique. And so they hit on in some of the early shows. They had a canceled show. Tour opened in Minneapolis on the 18th of January, the shows were considered kind of so-so. They dropped. Dazed and Confused, some of the early shows, because Page couldn't do with his finger, couldn't do the bowing stuff and all. They played on the second night in Chicago. They played Minneapolis January 18th, Chicago 20, 21, 22. The 21st they played When the Levee Breaks. It was the last time they ever played it live. I don't know. I think they played it once before. They put that in instead of In My Time of Dying, which was a new song in the set. And but a lot of these kind of changes were being made to the set list to accommodate the guys. On the 25th in Indianapolis, so 21, 22, Chicago, 24th Cleveland, 25th Indianapolis, and Plant could barely sing. Uh, And then they canceled St. Louis. I think I have the dates all. Oh, the Cleveland show was better. The Cleveland show. I think my date's a little messy up here, but I have all the dates down at the bottom, and I'll get to it. But St. Louis show was canceled because of Robert's throat flu, in which they actually flew out to L.A. for a couple of days in the sun to get out of the winter, and it seemed to have helped. When they picked up the tour again in New York, canceled in Greensboro, North Carolina, Detroit, Pittsburgh, the things were improving. And by the time they got to New York, Days Confused was back in the set list, and things like that were happening. Some other tour notes, right? So Linda Lovelace introduced them on March 27th, the last show of the LA tour. Jimmy introduced his dragon suit at the LA shows at the end of the month. That was the first use of the dragon suits, which would later also appear later in the year in May over at Earl's Court. And this is the black suit with the dragon in the arms and the dragon up the leg. There's also a white one that has a dragon on it, but has some other stuff. And there's a black one with a big rose up the side. There are two different ones. Simon Kirk of Bad Company showed up at Austin. In Austin on March 7, Simon Kirk of Bad Company joins Mr. Bonham on drums for A Whole Lot of Love and Black Dog. On the 13th of February in Uniondale, New York, Ron Wood showed up and played Communication Breakdown during the encore. These are the first shows, just from kind of some notes, right? The 75 tour, the first ones were where there was a drum stand for John Bonham, where John Paul Jones brought his grand piano out, also had a clavinet on stage for the first time. And Page started using his Dan Electric guitar for In My Time of Dying in Kashmir, and in When the Levee Breaks, when they replaced In My Time of Dying with When the Levee Breaks. He used the Dan Electro. John Bonham did the whole tour in his stage outfit. It was like white overalls, white coveralls, a white jumpsuit with a bowler hat. This is the famous John Bonham in the bowler hat. And this was circa Clockwork Orange, which was the big movie of the year. And I guess everybody, I've never seen the movie actually, but I guess everybody was wearing that in the movie. And Bonham wore that all tour. Except a couple of the shows in California where he was having some stomach trouble. And it was deemed that a regular pair of pants would allow him to get to the bathroom quicker in an emergency. Apparently that was an issue. So much so that they rented while everyone else was going to the shows in limos, they rented a RV for three or four shows. And he drove to either the show or the airport to get on the plane in the RV so he would have a bathroom nearby. His roadie, his personal roadie, Mick Hinton, also wore the white jumpsuit and bowler hat. And in Seattle, Jimmy was met backstage by a kid with a Les Paul guitar. In 69 or 70, he lost the guitar, either in Seattle or I thought it was Vancouver, but the book I read said Seattle. But he believed this was the guitar that was stolen on that one of those first tours up in the West Coast, the Northwest. And so kind of got it from the kid and arranged to have it spirited out of the country. But the cops caught up with the kid, arrested him. He had stolen it from his teacher and removed the guitar. And it's interesting, you wonder if Page thought this was his guitar that was stolen. Why not a bigger fuss? Why not get the lawyers involved and say, no, 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 this guy has my guitar, not the other way around? It had some very unique work done. That guitar had some very unique work done on it. And Jeff Strawman, if you get a chance to talk to him, slash when he gets his book out on the everybody's instruments and stuff. He will explain that in depth. That he had some very interesting work done. He's got a bunch of switches and on and off switches on that to arrange the pickups completely differently. So it was a very unique setup that Page had. So it would have been fairly easy, I would think, to prove this is my guitar. Look, here's pictures of this guitar with these switches, and you can't just buy those. Well, you can. You can't just buy the guitar like that. You can buy the switches and put them on yourself. But, yeah, it's kind of funny he didn't raise a bigger stink about that. But he didn't. And that guitar has since never been found. You'd wonder, too, why, you know, the reputation of the Zeppelin roadies. Okay, now we know who has his guitar. I don't care what the police say with the kid. Let's go get that guitar. It's very surprising. They just kind of seem to have dropped it. I guess. Mm. Anyways, one of the interesting side notes of that tour. Two warm-up shows. There were two warm-up shows in this tour in Rotterdam, Holland, and Rotterdam, Holland, and Brussels, Belgium, on January 11th and 12th. They also taped, about January 17th, they taped a TV show in England. But those January 11th and 12th were kind of the warm-up for the... and I think it was the 17th, I thought. Let me look this up real quickly. 17th in London. Oh, it was a TV appearance on the Old Grey Whistle Test. Doesn't mean they recorded it then, I gather. And then the 18th, the tour starts. This is the tour they brought Neil Preston to take pictures. Danny Goldberg to engage the press. And they kind of decided to up their game promotional-wise. And I'm going to talk in a bit about a book called Led Zeppelin 75 by Stephen Davis. He was one of the guys invited on the tour specifically to do some work on to write an article by Danny Goldberg, who again they had hired to improve their. Their PR. They were tired of outdrawing the Rolling Stones, yet not getting the press the Rolling Stones were getting. So anyway, here's the tour. January 18th in Minnesota. January 21st, 22nd, 21st, 22nd in Chicago. I have two A's in there, so Chicago. 24th in Richfield, Ohio. 25th in Indianapolis. 27th in St. Louis. That show was canceled because of Robert Plant's flu and cold and throat difficulties. So that's the 29th in Greensboro, North Carolina. So 25th, they Indianapolis, then they canceled St. Louis, and they buggered off for like 3 days to L.A. Greensboro, North Carolina. I think after Indianapolis, Plant was really bad, could barely sing after that show, and that's when they decided to cancel this. It wasn't the case of on the 27th they canceled St. Louis. It was after the 25th show they said, can't do this anymore. He cannot. He needs a rest. The doctors, I believe, kicked in with. And out to L.A. he went. Returned in better health for Greensboro, North Carolina on the 29th of January and the 31st of Detroit in Detroit. February 1st and 2nd off to Pittsburgh. And the second show, this is odd to me, and it happens just twice on this tour. The second show is unconfirmed. There's also one in Austin, Texas on the 7th of March. It's unconfirmed. How does Led Zeppelin in 1970? I get in 1969 that they were playing any old place and there were lots of little dives and wasn't there a show that can happen? But by 1975, the press was out there. How could there possibly be an unconfirmed show for Pittsburgh? That makes no sense to me. But that's according to Dave Lewis's The Concert File, a great book for this sort of thing. I use it in my research all the time. And The Concert File by Dave Lewis with Simon Pallett. And I'm showing it to the computer, showing it to the microphone, because that's just kind of dumb thing you do when you're talking and all like this. So there's Dave Lewis's The Concert File. To Pittsburgh, unconfirmed second show. The 3rd of February, Madison Square Garden in New York. The 4th in Uniondale, New York. The 6th in Montreal. The 7th in Madison Square Garden, New York. The 8th in Philadelphia. The 10th in Landover, Maryland. The 12th in New York, Madison Square Gardens. The 13th, 14th in Uniondale. 16th in St. Louis. 27th in Houston. And then a break. A break. There's a break. And I think they went off again to warmer climes. And they did, by the way, they did, instead of doing go to the show, grab a, or go to the town, get a hotel room, drive to the show, they actually had the, this is the tour where they had the plane. The first tour, I think. They might have had it in 73. They were using the Starship, and they anchored themselves in four different cities. Chicago, New York, New Orleans, and L.A. So the Minnesota, Chicago, Ohio, Indianapolis, St. Louis, Greensboro, Detroit, those they would have flown out of Chicago. The Pittsburgh, all the way down from Pittsburgh down to the 16th in St. Louis, that whole leg, they would have been based in New York, and they would have just flown out of New York. I get stay in the good town. I get, I love New York. Doesn't it make more sense to stay in, I don't know, a town that doesn't take an hour in traffic to get to the airport? You know what I mean? But I mean, I get they were doing New York stuff, but it just seems like staying, you know, somewhere in New Jersey where there's an airport right there, stay at the hotel while there, you know. But anyway, that takes them to the 16th. They went off for some warm weather, then off to Louisiana, where they stayed in Louisiana while they flew back and forth to Houston, Baton Rouge, on the 27th, 28th of February, March 3rd in Fort Worth, the 4th and 5th of March in Dallas, the 7th in Austin, unconfirmed. I'm doubting the 7th because, well, maybe last show of the tour, and last show of that leg of the tour, then it's off to L.A. L.A. In, for the 8th in Palm Beach, the 10th in San Diego, 11th, 12th in Long Beach, California, the 14th in San Diego, 17th in Seattle, 19th, 20th in Vancouver, 21st in Seattle, then 24, 25, and 27 of March in the Forum in L.A. And, of course, during the L.A., during that stretch, they stay in the Continental Riot House. Continental Hyatt House, as it's called, Riot House, as it became known, particularly as Led Zeppelin was staying there. So that's the tour of 1975, and the band was, it's worth noting, by the end especially, the band is playing good, and I've been listening for the last 2 weeks to, I think, four shows I put on my iPod, and one of the Seattle shows, one of the Vancouver shows, one of the Uniondale, New York shows, I think, and one of the LA shows, and I can tell you that, what's the Uniondale? Uniondale, February 13th in Uniondale. And the Uniondale, the Vancouver, the Seattle shows are all soundboards. And that's kind of why, so they sound great. Seattle, March 17. Vancouver, I got Vancouver 75. I don't have the specific date of that particular show. And then the last show, the last LA show, I have not a soundboard, but an audience. But they're playing really well by the point, by the end of the show. They were on fire. Then, of course, they went off, and this is March, so April, May. 6 weeks later, they did their Earl's Court shows, and it was probably the height, the musical peak of Led Zeppelin at that point. It's worth noting the drugs were in by this time, that there was some level of here we go. Jimmy was said to be using heroin. John Bonham was drinking a lot, looked fat, drank more than usual, and may also have been dabbling in heroin. Jones had also, of course, talked about leaving the band around this time. So the band, they were starting to kind of plant, was avoiding a lot of the action at the time. So there was other stuff going on around, this stuff started going on around the band at this time. And, but the hard drugs, the heroin, for instance, it sounds, 75, it was more of a dabble for these guys. And I think I read somewhere that it was 76, where Page was living in L.A. in 76. And he actually was off the heroin. He got himself off it. And he went to New York for a weekend. To spend the weekend with Keith Richards. And came back full-blown hooked. That is a story I picked up somewhere. I forget where. But the drugs are there. The little stuff is starting to come into the game. But it's not as bad as it would be 2 years later. And anyway, so I have this book, and it shocked me to discover I had never reviewed it for this podcast. And it's called, it's by Stephen Davis. Stephen Davis also did Hammer of the Gods, and he was invited on the 75 tour by Danny Goldberg, and ended up not, the story was Danny Goldberg called him, knew him, and, you know, was friends with him, says, I can get you on the tour, you need to have a magazine. It doesn't matter what magazine, you need to have an assignment. So it was like Atlantic Monthly or something. Some dumb magazine like that. And it didn't so he got it anyway. He got the gig and got on the tour. And he wound up picking up with the band in New York and traveling more or less with them all the way through to the end. The shows, he had to get himself into the shows in L.A., although he was able to use his previous backstage pass for the first two nights. The third night, he bought a scalper ticket way at the back, which he said was an interesting, you know, kind of different approach, being backstage or being very close up in the friends and family section. It was, you know, very different compared to the back of the arena, so it gave him a chance to do that. But he saw a number of shows, traveled with the band, and he was not a fan beforehand. And he actually talks a bit about, and I wrote a couple of things at the time. I reviewed this book, but it was way back in 2010, which shocked me that that's when it was. It seemed so, and I was sure I remember doing a review on the podcast, but I never have. So I just kind of went back to my reviews of it, and I did reread it for this. But here's what he has to say. Very early, taking my assignment seriously, I had to familiarize myself with Led Zeppelin's music. I had never even listened to 1973 in House of the Holy. For the record, he was an editor at Rolling Stone at that time. He was an editor at Rolling Stone magazine, the number one music magazine in the country, and he had never even listened to Houses of the Holy. That tells you all you want to know about Led Zeppelin's relationship with the press and with Rolling Stone magazine. That's how bad they really were at covering the music that mattered. That they hadn't, you know, their music editor did not even know who Led Zeppelin. Although he was a fan in the early days, he's seen them in Boston in like the first tour and loved them, and then kind of went off to do more pretentious crap and lost them. His brother Chris was 8 years younger, and in 1975 was still a big Zeppelin fan, so he got him bootlegs and told him, you have to listen to the bootlegs. I write in back in November of 2010, I write, in 1975 you could be 1 year out of a Rolling Stone editorship and never listen to a Led Zeppelin album that had been number one on Billboard, Cashbox, and the UK album charts. Never need to wonder again why Led Zeppelin so mistrusted the rock press. And then I mentioned that Led Zeppelin mistrusted, even hated the press, an important part of the story of Led Zeppelin 75. Stephen Davis was invited to travel with Led Zeppelin, courtesy of Led Zeppelin, in a proactive attempt to get better press for the band. Stephen Davis, in short, didn't do his job for 5 years and was rewarded with the gig of a lifetime. His superior attitude that the Stone Kids who like Zeppelin were, quote, in the clutches of ardent fandom, runs throughout the narrative. That was something I wrote even before I reviewed it. It was just something that really stuck in my craw reading it. It's unbelievable that this guy was an editor at Rolling Stone, yet really wasn't familiar with Led Zeppelin in 1975. Anyway, so I did a review of it November 1st, 2010. That was November 24th, so November 1st. Something's just come up, and I'm going to have to cut this off. So let's just say it's a good read. It's an easy read. It's a comfortable read. It's a guy who traveled with Led Zeppelin and had quite an experience, but it's also more personal. It's a diary style. So there's a lot of junk that's irrelevant to the story of Led Zeppelin that makes its way in. But listen, go to RambleOnRadio.com, do a quick Google for Stephen Davis or Led Zeppelin /75 or a quick search, and you'll see, read the review. I'll talk about it a bit next week too. All right, that's it for Ramble on Radio episode 93. Check out RambleOnRadio.com excuse me, for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links mentioned today's podcast. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes, listen on Spreaker, and check it out on Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio episode 93. Keep it coolin', babies.
I'm sure there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.
Time to wrap up. Goodbye.